The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Always a pleasure to talk to my next guest here. This show is called Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission on your mind. Of course, we came up with that term there because he used to work for the Jimmy Hell Mission, and then he moved on to the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org, and does a wonderful job covering 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. He's Michael Coleman. Michael, how you doing, brother? How's life down there in Montgomery?
Hey, it's good. It's a different type of mission. It's a mission to fight against food insecurity and yes. help bridge some of those gaps. Just came from a luncheon. I was talking to a group of people about childhood traumas. And there's so many childhood dramas, and one of those is food insecurity, not having enough food. And we would see that in people who were helping at Jimmy Hale, who grew up. And, you know, when there's so many childhood traumas that the kids grow up with, and some can adapt and some can't. But oftentimes, when you can't cope and you don't have the coping mechanisms, it leads into further things such as alcohol, drug abuse. And then that can lead to homelessness. And then, you know, it's just not the life that I want our neighbors to have. So we're trying to battle it on the front end and trying to do as much as we can to impact that.
You know, I don't think that's a really interesting thing you bring up too, because, you know, my dad was a newspaper distributor. My mom was a stay-home mom. And, you know, we used to have chick beef on toast, and we had city chicken. It was white chicken on a stick. We were always fed. We always had something decent to eat, but it was what we knew as good food. If we ever had lamb, we knew there was a special occasion. I remember my dad, there was one time of the year where he'd get really, really excited. He would actually deliver newspapers to a Ford plant down the street. And one of the guys who worked at the Ford plant also worked at a meat distribution center. And he would get my dad a side of beef once a year as kind of a gift. And when my dad got a side of beef, man, you would have thought we were the Rockefellers. I mean, he'd come home, he'd be kicking up his heels because he knew we had steaks like the next 4 or 5 months, and we ate really good. But, you know, when you're talking about, you know, what we go through, and I, at a smaller level, I went through this this past December, to be honest with you. I went through a point where I had a lot of clients that were over 90 days, and I realized times were tough and needed to keep my business on. And for about 3 weeks, man, we were white breading it with peanut butter and jelly and making mayonnaise sandwiches, and we had a good time with it. I didn't tell them we were hurting that bad, but until we got some money in the coffers, and it just happens in a small business environment. But I can't imagine for these kids, and I've heard the stat, 1 in 6 children go hungry, and these are kids that go to our schools. These are kids that live down
That's
the
right.
street. And so recognize it and to know that there is the food out there. And then, you know, you bring up something too, just the fear or the insecurity of people knowing what your financial situation is and having to go through food bank lines or food pantries to feed your family is something that is a fearful thing, and it makes people feel bad because they are working hard. They're trying to do all the right things to bring it. But when you talk about the inflation that we're going through right now, it's super hard for a lot of people out there right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And I just simplify it this way, especially when I'm talking to kids and stuff. I said, look, you come home every night and usually you say, Mom or Dad, what's for supper? You never come home and go, are we going to get to eat tonight?
Yes.
And it's a totally different question. We are so blessed and have been so blessed that, you know, our that's a question most of our kids don't have to ask. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, indeed.
But there are lots of kids that we may not even know who come to school every day. And the last thing they have was what they got at lunch the day prior at school. And it's, you know, when they're trying to grow and both mentally and physically and emotionally, and it just affects your learning. So you have somebody who's already got tons of barriers to overcome anyway.
Yep.
And now that's just one more thing that's inhibiting them from getting a proper education, puts them further behind their peers. And it's lots of times things that stay forever. I will tell you right now, we're starting an initiative with the community college system. And there's been research done across the community college system that, you know, half of the people who are going to community college systems are making it on less than $20,000 a year.
Wow.
And that's why you go to community college system. And lots of times people fall out because they don't have money to eat. And so we're trying to link this and do a study and actually open up some pantries at community colleges in Alabama to try to get into the idea of that it's a student retention issue, that it's not just, hey, this is a nice thing to give to our students who are struggling, but actually this is, we need to do this to, we can prevent people from dropping out if they have the basic sustenances needed to make it. And so, yeah, we're real excited about that opportunity.
My daughter has a good friend at her school, and I'll tell you, it's Oak Mountain, which is a good school district. It's a great school district, and she loves when it gets warm. And she always talks about, I love when it starts getting warm, Mr. Curry. And I was like, why is that? She goes, because when it gets warm, there's blooms. And when there's blooms, we get our blueberry bushes full, and we get our apple trees full. And she goes, and I get to snack. And I thought,
yeah, wow.
And I'm thinking to myself, wow, that just, I mean, it tugs at your heartstrings. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. We get into our email questions about once a month around here. Some great email questions. We'll answer anything business related. And of course, thanks to the over 100,000 people who have downloaded the TKR app. You listen to the show at least 5 days a week. You can listen to it as many times as you want. And you can certainly do that on our podcast network too. Tony Curry Radio Podcast. That's TKR Podcast or Tony Curry Curry, K-U-R-R-E. Podcast. We're available wherever you listen to your podcast. Stuart in Mountain Brook. This is a great question here. What are Michael's thoughts on company retreats? And if you have one, should it be mandatory that all employees go? Let's back this up a little bit. I don't know if you've done retreats. I don't think we're talking about taking your team out for drinks after 5 o'clock on a Friday or maybe going bowling on a Saturday. But maybe some type of business retreats. I know a lot of people have conferences, you know, in Las Vegas and stuff. But first of all, why, if you're a company owner, would you want to have a retreat? And second of all, if in fact you do have some type of retreat that maybe has different classes and things like that, why would it be mandatory for your employees?
Yeah, so, you know, you And just so the audience knows, Tony does not give me these questions in advance. So he just read this to me and I'm digesting it and trying to reflect back on my own experiences. I will tell you, in the nonprofit world, it's a little bit more common to do like board retreats. Oh. And when you do a board retreat, you basically have an agenda of what you want your people, what you want your board to focus on. And it's a lot of relationship building. And the idea is when you build more relationship, there's more cohesion. You have broken down barriers because you've gotten to know each other. You get to find out what similarities you share. And so the idea is you're not four strangers coming monthly or every other month to the table to deal through, to work through issues. You have a relationship. And so you feel it's easier to talk more openly, to share your thoughts. And so you just get a better board member. I think that's very true with employees as well. You know, when you can bring everybody together outside of the office, you don't have the distractions of work. You don't have the distractions of customers coming in, or you're not in the warehouse. You're not running 90 to nothing on the forklift. You can just get together and really have some good, meaningful conversation and relationship building. I think it's very valuable. Now, what you don't want to do is you have to be very careful in how you carry that off. And I will give you one example of something I've done before. This is not, wasn't a retreat, but it's what you mentioned of going out after work. So I had a group of people that I worked with, invited everybody to go, and we were going to go to a bar and grill after work. And I'm like, hey, we can get some, you know, just everybody come. And if you want an alcoholic beverage, you're welcome to. But if not, you know, just come anyway, and we'll have some, you know, we'll get some food, some appetizers,
yeah,
and just sit around and chat. Well, I think some people didn't want to come. Because you've got some people who are maybe more introverted, not, that's really not their thing. Some people may not feel comfortable around alcohol, just all these different reasons. Mm-hmm. Well, the very next day, there was a complaint sent to my HR. The fear was, is that the people who went out were now part of my clique. Oh. And the people who weren't, now we're not going to get as much face time, or they were not going to be perceived as favorably. And so I had to cut the whole thing out. Now, part of that had to do with my HR. I probably didn't have to, but at the time, you know, I was trying to go the extra mile to show, well, I don't want to do anything that's going to portray that I care about one group of employees more than others. So there's always that, you know, I just wanted to go out with employees and get to know them better. Yeah. And so it was well-intentioned, but you just never know how other people read that. And then you've also got just one more thing. So you've got entry-level employees who are struggling to make it. And then you've got, you know, higher people. So if there's any cost in a trip like that, which oftentimes there is, even though the company may reimburse you, there's some upfront cost. And a lot of people are embarrassed to say, no, I can't make it. I can't afford the gas to go up. And so they inadvertently get left out. And then you've kind of worked against what you're trying to do. So if you're going to do it, I would encourage you to do it. But just think it through and make sure that you're as inclusive as you absolutely can be, that you're not sending a message that, hey, the cool guys are going to go hang out and we don't care if the other people don't come hang out. Bring them together. And I think your benefit, your business or your nonprofit will benefit from a retreat, so long as it's honest, it's an open environment, and people kind of can talk about what they're dealing with, where they're coming from, and their perspective on things.
Well, and it's something you can do too, and I'm sure you've done this, is bring it into house. Bring it into the business. I mean, if you want to cater it or you want to bring some food into the business, you know, we used to do that up at Cumulus once a month. We had a big lunch, you know, at noon the last Friday of each month. And that way everyone's there and they can go grab their food. They can leave. They can do whatever. But the camaraderie is wonderful. And I certainly understand that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I was thinking about that. Like, sure. Sometimes they'll do overnight retreats.
Yeah.
With a board. Or sometimes it'll be like an all-day Saturday retreat. But it could be something like, I've had this happen before where just one of my department leaders goes, listen, you know, it was my development leader. He had all his staff. He had about 5 staff members. And he couldn't sit down and have a meeting with them because the phones kept ringing out. So he just said, hey, can I go? I'm going to rent a space. I'm going to go. We're going to spend all afternoon there. We're going to order food and all that. And we're just going to plan for the upcoming year. I said, absolutely. So they just went off as a whole department. So any kind of gathering of people that you wouldn't normally gather with, but it's a space where you can grow in your relationship, I think ultimately is beneficial.
Tiffany and Homewood, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You're listening to Mission Minded with Michael Coleman at the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. Really, I'm not sure really a question, but more of a situation. She's in Homewood. She's been working at a mid-range restaurant for about 4 years and hopes to become a manager of the store. She was finally given that opportunity to become a manager and went from hourly to salary. So she was making more money, but she didn't realize that she wasn't going to get paid for overtime. She said after her first 6 months, she's actually making less per hour than she was before, but she's got the manager's job title. Did she do the right thing?
Well, you know, that's the whole unintended consequence.
Be careful what you wish for, my friend.
Yeah, yes. Be careful what you wish for. Well, let me tell you. It all depends on what her ultimate goals are. I would say, even if you look at it strictly from a financial situation, even though you may have taken ultimately less money compared to the number of hours you're working, if you're showing that you have a certain level of responsibility, you can be counted on, you're a key member of management, then by taking this like this, you've ultimately opened yourself up to even more advancement into that company by stepping forward and doing this. Now, it depends on how much advancement's in the company. Typically, in the restaurant business, you know, you're going to have, if a family owns it, you're going to have limited opportunity and growth. And so, in that case, you may have, you may have kind of set yourself back just a little bit, but you always have that. It's a big deal when I interview people and I'm looking and you're able to put that you were a manager, regardless of what you get paid. That sends a different vibe about who you are, because what it's showing is that you are somebody who can handle responsibility, you can problem solve, you can be trusted, and that you have a work ethic and that you can manage people. And I'm going to tell you, that's getting more and more rare, believe it or not. I'm interviewing right now for a pretty high-level position, and I'm amazed at some of those applications that I'm getting. And so those skill sets that you're learning, even though it's not necessarily as financially lucrative for you right now, I'm telling you, are valuable. And you can parlay those, even if it's not within your company, you can parlay those into other opportunities where that managerial role and those areas in which you've learned will pay off later down the road.
And Mike, I think it's important that you look inside your own industry, if she's been there for 4 or 5 years, and look how freely they give out titles. I know a lot of people are like, listen, we can't pay you right now, but we'll give you a title. And I would be, and I've been in that position, I would be leery of that, because if they're willing to give you a title of something without compensation for it, I think it kind of takes a little shine off what that title is. And then do a little resume searching, because if you're looking around going, and I'll use this as an example, program directors in radio used to be really important. And now I think that title's been given out so freely, just because you've been there for 15, 20 years, we can't give any more money, but we'll make you program director of this radio station. Does it really mean anything? And see if it's really a resume builder, because if it's in fact something you want to grow in as far as in an industry, you need to make sure that being a program director of whatever it is, whether it's a manager of a Panera Bread or a program director of a radio station, does it carry some weight with it when you're looking at your next job, correct?
Yeah, and I would tell you that I've just went through this, so it's really fresh in my mind. But in the state of Alabama, and I assume it's this way in other places, you get into this whole exempt or non-exempt. And a non-exempt employee, there's a law, so I think this is federal. If you are non-exempt, it means that you are not exempt from overtime pay, or from the requirements of overtime pay, but you can be both non-exempt hourly and non-exempt salary. And both of those mean that you are not exempt from overtime work. So just because you are a manager does not necessarily make you what they call an exempt employee. So I would look at the law. We have people who are salaried here at the food bank who are salaried hourly, and then we have people who have a little bit more responsibility, but it still doesn't meet the requirement. And I will tell you this, the base requirement is it's just under $36,000, and a lot of people will pay more than $36,000 and go, oh, I'm going to make you exempt. Well, that it can't just be, it's not about the salary, it's got to be the amount of responsibilities you have. So you have admin exemptions, you have executive exemptions, you have others. So I really encourage you to look into the law, because just because they say you're exempt doesn't mean that position necessarily qualifies, and you could push back on that or let them know that you want to be salaried but non-exempt if you qualify for that. It's a complex issue, but a lot of people just get, and I don't know that this is the case here, but a lot of people, most people, I would say, don't understand exempt, non-exempt standards and rules, and a lot of employees get abused because of it.
You are listening to Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. I'm Tony Curry, his co-host. Of course, you can check out MAFB.org to help out the Montgomery Area Food Bank. They cover 35 counties here in the state. And of course, we've done about 50 of these shows, and you can podcast, listen to them at your leisure. And we're going to be doing a brand new show coming up here in the next few weeks that we're super excited about with Michael as well. Speaking of Mike in Pensacola, this is kind of hitting us all right here. He goes, what's Michael Coleman's view on tipping? He said the tipping culture has gotten out of control. He said he was at a Best Buy the other day, and there was a tip jar for the drivers at Best Buy. because they don't make the same money as the people that work in the stores. He's like, you got to be kidding me. Now I'm tipping on merchandise. Have we gotten crazy with, and listen, we're all getting hit up left and right for tips. Commissary type of stuff where we don't have servers anymore. You're walking up and they almost make you feel guilty because before you put your credit card in, you've got to tap the screen first before you actually pay for your bill. It drives me crazy. Your thoughts on the whole tipping culture?
So I will tell you, I will give you the non-emotional response of what you should do. And then I will tell you what I do. It's very much like would tell my daughter, you know, I can tell other people how to raise their kids and like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. But then when it comes to my own daughters, I do something totally different. So I'm so inconsistent, and I'm going to be inconsistent with this answer.
All right.
It is, I think, ridiculous how much that everything, no matter what it is, there's tipping involved. And I've always tipped my barber. I've always tipped, you know, just normal tipping stuff, but now it's everywhere. And so I do think it's too much. I do think it's sometimes not appropriate. Especially you go into fast food places now and just, but I get it because a lot of people are, you know, they're like, hey, I'm going to ask the question if I can squeeze more money out, you know, so I get it. I get where they're coming from. They don't make a lot of money. So here's where I am though. Is I'm typically a pretty generous person. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm like, this is ridiculous, I still usually tip. So I'm the one who's making the system bad because I'm the one who's tipping because I don't want to, you know, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to tip a couple bucks. It may matter to them. It doesn't really matter to me. But a lot of people out there are going, well, Mike, what's the principle? And I get it. And I'm with you. The principle says, we're over the top with it, but personally, I just find that it's, I enjoy giving, when I have it. And so it's one of those things that I recognize what I necessarily think is right. And what I do are just a little inconsistent, but I typically tip something unless they've really just been rude or haven't, provided any service at all.
I'll never forget the first time I went on a cruise. I guess it was back in 1991, 92, something like that. And I was actually with my girlfriend who became my wife. And, we're rolling through our money. And, of course, you have to get a credit card. You have to put money into an account to use a credit card to get your drinks and everything else. And and then we get down to the last couple of days, and I'm about tapped out. And they hand you, like, a stack of 10 envelopes. And each envelope is what you're supposed to leave your tip in for the person who turned your bed down, for the captain, for the chef, for the deckhand. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I'm thinking, how much do you put in? They all expect about $20 or $30 a piece. I'm like, it's another $300. And I was like, seriously? I could not believe it. I was like, you should have asked for that 7 days ago because that ain't happening. The cruise industry is backwards from that standpoint.
Well, I know we're going on a cruise in 2 weeks. And,
man.
And I'm already anticipating because I've only been on one other cruise.
Yeah.
And when I got off the boat, now it's all automated. So this was 7 years ago. And they're like, okay, here's all the drinks you had or whatever. And then the tip. And I was like, you are kidding. I mean, it was phenomenal how much they expect you to. And I guess you don't have to technically on some things, but man, it's a punch. You better be ready for it.
Well, I think, you know, and we've done a couple of all-inclusive trips where tips are included. Which I absolutely loved because it's one less thing I had to worry about. Now you can still tip on top of that, but they're not supposed to take tips.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot more expensive, but depending on what you drink and how many restaurants you want to go eat to, it's another idea. All right. One final email question. info@tonycurryradio.net here with Michael Coleman for Mission Minded. Larry in Lexington, has a successful sandwich shop. After expanded late last year, next door to another shop to make a shop even bigger, he's had a friend of his that told him he should franchise. Can you give us just the background things of what you need to do to franchise? I know that's, and we could do, you know what, we could continue this next week and do a whole show on how to franchise. That way we give you a week to do some homework. But if you want to franchise your name out, what's the first step to take?
Yeah, the first step to take is you get with an attorney,
Yeah.
and because that's a big deal how you set those up. And that's not my background or my expertise, but I will tell you, I've learned the hard way because I would rather just Google everything and just borrow this legal form or borrow that legal form. If you're really serious about thinking through this, you really need to look at the dynamics of the market. And so I would hire maybe, and I know I'm throwing these out like it's like you could just hire anybody you want to, but I would definitely do some research. I would get a firm to understand the fast food market, where it's trending, especially for the type of food that you have, because you may have the absolute best cuisine available. Let's say it's a sandwich shop, and you're overwhelmed by the amount of customers you have, and you're like, man, if I just expand this out, I could make a killing. But so often people then make that leap, and there's a dynamic that happens when you get into having to administer that, and you get into franchise fees, and then overseeing your product to make sure it stays as you want it to. It's a really big deal, and it's a huge undertaking. Now, it could be the absolute right thing for you to do, so don't interpret that as me encouraging you not to. But I would sit down with smart people, because even if you spent, a few thousand dollars, $5,000, $10,000, and you walk away from that saying, you know what, this isn't the right decision, then trust me, it's much better. That's a $10,000 lesson that you learned and ultimately saved yourself hundreds of thousands of dollars in mistakes that aren't easily undone.
Great stuff, Michael. Tell people how they can help you.
Yeah, come to mafb.org and help us. Every day we're fighting food insecurity and just helping people, just trying to close those gaps. And we'd love anybody that's willing to help to jump on board with us.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.